it this way, didn't you? It's the only way we could get here, Jamie. Damn it, the politicians weren't going to back another expedition. Why do you think it took 6 years to get this one here? Jamie glared at him. I'm a scientist, too, Dex said. I talked my father into getting the money for us because I wanted to go to Mars. You think you're the only one? With a shake of his head, Jamie said, But the price, Dex, the price. It'd be better if we'd left Mars alone for another 100 years and waited until we could come here purely for the science. In a perfect world, maybe, Dex replied, his voice lower. But then you and I wouldn't be here, would we? No, I guess not. Well, I want to be on Mars. Now. Me. Whatever it costs. And you feel the same way, too, or you wouldn't be here. Jamie looked into the younger man's face. The brash grin was gone. The blue-green eyes were deep and unwavering. Maybe you're right, Jamie admitted, heading back toward the galley again. But I feel like a Judas goat. Or Kit Carson, maybe. Jamie whirled back and saw that Dex was grinning again. He knows about the long walk when Carson and the army forced the people off their own land. Right, he said tightly. Kit Carson. That's me. Afternoon. Sol 101. Jamie dangled half a mile from the cliff's rim, swaying in the harness, the layered reddish rock face a mere arm's length from him. He touched it with one booted foot, then pushed away. It made him tilt back and forth dizzily like a kid on a swing. Almost there, he grunted. He realized that he was panting and sweaty, even with the motorized winch doing most of the work. Take it easy now. Dex's voice sounded tight, harsh in his earphones. The two men had said almost nothing to one another after their argument the previous night. Their only words had been those necessary for their work. Jamie realized he was trusting his life to Dex, up there with the winch that held his lifeline. He almost laughed to himself. Our argument is purely philosophical, not physical. But then he thought of Vijay and realized that it could get physical quickly enough once they returned to the dome. Carefully, he touched the power control. The rock face slid past too fast, almost a blur. He lifted his gloved finger from the control stud and the harness jerked to a stop again, swinging him even more violently than before. He banged against the rock with his shoulder, forcing a grunt from his lungs, then put his legs out again to cushion the next blow. You okay? Yeah, okay, Jamie answered. I'm getting seasick watching your imagery, Dex complained. The bulky VR cameras clipped to Jamie's helmet were recording everything, not so much for show business, but to maintain a record of the descent. Dex had set up a portable monitor beside the winch up at the rim of the canyon. Reluctantly, Jamie looked down. The cleft in the rock wall was still several hundred meters below, and the bottom of the canyon seemed thousands of kilometers deeper, swaying rhythmically, so far down that it looked like a carpet of red blood waiting for him to fall into it. How's that look, wise ass? He asked Dex silently. Then his own stomach heaved. Jamie clutched the thin buckyball cable with both hands. Closing his eyes, he told himself that the cable could hold more than a ton of weight, that he himself weighed only a third on Mars of his weight on Earth, that the harness held him securely and had never been known to break. Still, it was a long way down. A long way. He leaned back as far as he dared to look up through the visor of his helmet and realized it was a long way back up to the canyon rim, too. Licking his lips, he said into his helmet microphone, Okay, one more time ought to do it. Be careful, Dex said. Right, Jamie said, adding silently, Great advice, like he gives a damn. He touched the power stud as lightly as he could, barely kissing it, and the cliff wall slid past more slowly. Maybe I'm getting the hang of it, Jamie told himself. The ride smoothed out as he held his finger frozen on the button and watched the rock face unreal past his staring eyes, layer upon layer, red and brown, pink and bleached pale tan, a streak of yellowish white, a smear of gleaming silver. It looked to him like sedimentary deposits that had been put down billions of years ago, when Mars was young and an ocean covered what was now bleak, waterless desert. And then the land had split apart, ripped open for thousands of kilometers, a jagged wound that left a scar 8 kilometers deep. It made the Grand Canyon of Arizona look like a dimple. What broke the ground open like this? What could rip open a canyon so wide you can't even see the other side of it because it's over the horizon? It couldn't be plate tectonics like on Earth. Mars's core wasn't hot enough for long enough to cause a rift like this. A crevice scrolled up before him and Jamie stopped the winch. But it was only a crack in the canyon wall. A long, thin cave, dark and empty. No Navajos hiding in it from Carson and his treacherous Ute Indian scouts. He started down again. No sound except his own breathing. The winch itself was more than a kilometer above him, up on the canyon rim with Trumbull. The rock began to blur again, too fast. Jamie eased the pressure of his cramped finger, and his descent slowed. He glanced down again and saw, between his dangling boots, the dark edge of the niche. Almost there. Another few meters. Slowly, painfully slowly, he lowered himself. It was a huge recess in the canyon wall, as big as the hollow at Mesa Verde, maybe bigger. Heavy rock overhang to protect it from the weather. Not that there'd been much weather on Mars over the past 1,000 millennia. "I'm at the niche," he reported into his helmet mic. "Going to manual." For a moment there was no reply. Then Dex's voice said tightly, "I'm getting your camera view. Looks good." Jamie nodded. "If anything happens to me, they'll have it all on video. Something for the tourists to see." Swinging in midair, he disengaged the winch's power control and began lowering himself by hand, slowly, carefully, staring into the shadowed recess in the cliff face as he descended. It was there. Jamie saw a smooth wall of grayish pink, something like sandstone, rising from the floor of the giant cave. It was laid out so perfectly straight that it couldn't possibly be a natural formation. It had been built, constructed by intelligence. For eternally long moments he hung there in the harness, swaying slightly back and forth, and merely stared at the wall rising into the shadows of the crevasse, almost as high as the rock ceiling would allow. He could feel his heart thumping against his ribs. "Are you all right?" Dex's voice stirred him out of his awestruck daze. "Do you see it?" Jamie shouted, his voice pitched high with exhilaration. "Yeah, I've got it on the monitor," he replied. "It really looks like a wall." "It is a wall. A wall that somebody built." "Don't go jumping to conclusions," Dex said, his voice strained, harsh. Slowly, deliberately, Jamie turned his head from one end of the wall to its far corner so that the camera mounted on his helmet, slaved to where his eyes pointed, could record its entire length. "Nearly 100 meters long," he reported. "About 10-12 meters high, I'd estimate." "It looks like the top edge has crumbled," Dex said. "Hard to tell, though. It's in shadow." "Crumbled. Broken, right," said Jamie. "Must be fairly soft material. Sandstone or something like it." "Can you tell how thick it is?" "Not from here." No response from above. "He knows what's coming next," Jamie told himself. "I'm going in," he said. Immediately, Dex replied, "No, it's too late in the day. The sun'll be going down in another hour or so. It'll still be there tomorrow." "I can do it," Jamie said. "I've climbed enough mountains on Earth to handle this." Silently, he added, "The hell with tomorrow. I'm going in there now." He unclipped the spring-loaded tether gun from his equipment belt and held it in both gloved hands, aiming for the niche's rock floor rather than the wall itself. Sandstone might give way, he told himself, but in reality he knew it would be sacrilegious to deface the wall. Jamie squeezed the trigger and the tether buzzed out, vibrating in his hands as it unreeled. The power spike embedded itself in the rock floor with a thunk he could hear even in the thin air as he dangled in the harness. When he fastened the gun back on his belt, the tether automatically adjusted its tension to take up the slack. Jamie tested the line. It seemed to be holding fast. Damn it, Jamie, if you don't start up, I'm going to power up the winch and drag you up. Come on, now.